Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us on The Conversation on this Monday, May 6th. Lawmakers ended the legislative session Friday, saying they passed sweeping tax breaks for working families. We take a closer look at the efforts. The Hawaii Tax Foundation weighs in. The American Cancer Society releases a report on disease rates in Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. What can be done to reverse the trends? And a Ukrainian student who attended Kalani High School 5 years ago returns to the islands. He shares what life is like in his country today and the Hawaii dish he craves so much he went looking for the recipe. You're tuned to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. State lawmakers hail their efforts this session to provide relief to Hawaii families struggling with the high cost of living. HPR reporter Ashley Mizuo joins us to talk about what the lawmakers reached consensus on. Good morning.
Good morning. So, when we started the session, they were really concerned about not having enough money to balance, Maui recovery with core government services. But, in the end of the legislative session, that turned out to be definitely manageable, and they were able to even implement some tax adjustments, one of the biggest ones being a big income tax cut. And you'll talk about this a lot in your next segment with Tom Yamachika from the Tax Foundation of Hawaii. But lawmakers passed what they're calling the biggest tax cut in the state's history. And it's estimated that it'll cut taxes by about $5 billion over the next 6 years. One, the first cut starts in 2025, the next phase is 2027, and then the final one happens in 2029. House Finance Chair Kyle Yamashita said that this is a step in the right direction to lower the cost of living for people here.
The tax bill that we did pass is the largest in state history, but it's just a step towards what we need to do as far as total tax reform, because at the end of the day, our biggest problem in our state is high cost of living, and that our tax structure is at the root of that.
So he's alluding, to future maybe adjustments to Hawaii's tax structure to lower the cost of living. He floated possibly diverting the GET tax for rail when it expires in 2030 to make up for the cost of the income tax cuts that were just passed. But he didn't commit to doing that. But he said that, all of these types of options are on the table. The legislature also passed a bill that would exempt Medicaid and Medicare medical services from GET tax. So those were kind of the two big tax-related cuts that they were able to make. They also were able to pass a big short-term rental bill that you just heard earlier talked about. And so that gives counties the ability to, phase out these non-conforming use permits, which are these permits that were given to, short-term rentals decades ago, and they allow them to operate in place residential areas, and they haven't been able to, phase those permits out. But this new law that was passed should give them the ability to do that. It also explicitly outlines that counties are able to control the time, place, manner, and duration of which the short-term rentals are taking place, and that's to help, the Honolulu ordinance that was passed that makes 180 days as a minimum stay for short-term rentals or for rentals in general take effect, because that was, stricken down by the courts. And so Honolulu Mayor Rick Blangiardi believes that this short-term rental bill that just got passed at the state level will give Oahu the ability to actually enforce that law that's on the books. Additionally, Maui Mayor Richard Bisson is already taking action on this measure, and we could see the elimination of 7,000 short-term rentals if his bill at the Maui County passes. Additionally, the legislature was able to pass measures to give Maui hundreds of millions of dollars for recovery. They were also passed a bill to create a state fire marshal and deliver more funding to DLNR to buy new equipment. Here's Senate President Ron Kochi.
As we started this session, we were so worried that everybody was going to have to make a collective sacrifice to help our Ohana in Maui because of the devastation of the fires and what we thought would happen to our economic outlook. But instead, we at least got a flat revenue projection, which allowed all of the great things to happen.
And the legislature was also able to put in another $300 million into the state's rainy day fund, which is, you know, in case of emergencies. And Senate President Cochi says, you know, this allows the state to remain financially sound even in the event of emergencies. He pointed to the largeness of the fund to begin with, and that's kind of a reason why Hawaii is able to borrow money at really low interest rates. Also passed this session was a measure for voters, a constitutional amendment that's going to be put to voters to protect same-sex marriage by removing a section of our state constitution that allows the legislature to limit marriage to those of the opposite sex. So that question is going to be going to voters to decide in November. So these are some of the big things that were passed in this legislative session.
Okay, so what failed? I know we covered some of this last week.
Yeah, so there was a lot left on the table when it came to wildfire mitigation and property insurance, which are two things that they really want to tackle. So first, the wildfire mitigation measures. The legislature did not pass a securitization bill that would have allowed Hawaiian Electric to issue ratepayer-backed bonds for fire mitigation. This was kind of going back and forth, and whether or not it would even get a hearing in the conference. In the end, it was not heard, and so it failed. But Governor Josh Green has put together a climate action task force to, you know, advise and be the go-between between the legislature and the executive branch on more climate mitigation efforts. Another measure that didn't pass this session, again, was Josh Green's climate impact fee that would have charged tourists $25 when they arrive at their hotel and use that for other environmental issues. And so that didn't pass either. Everyone seems to be kind of awaiting the phase three of the Attorney General's Maui wildfire report and the report from the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives, which is supposed to determine the cause of the Maui fires. When I talked to Senate President Cochi about a month ago when the phase one of the Attorney General report came out, he said that these phase two, phase three, and then the federal report would be really important in the interim to impact policy next session, and that all of this information is really essential because he said that he wanted the legislature to have all the information that they could get to create good sound policy instead of rushing forward with, you know, haphazard policy. Another big priority that really wasn't fully addressed this session was stabilizing property insurance in Hawaii. House Speaker Scott Saiki said the legislature will continue to need to address this next session.
Climate change, disaster risk, hurricane risk have caused property insurance carriers to increase rates or to stop issuing policies in Hawaii. And we've seen the initial effects of that within condominium buildings, but it will eventually begin to affect townhouses and single family homes. So we will have to probably try to address this next year.
You know, there are only three insurers in the state for condominium buildings, and so they're having a really hard time securing insurance policies because these buildings are viewed as high risk. The state legislature this year also did not pass a measure that would create a wildfire relief fund that would have allowed stakeholders like the state, HECO, and large landowners to pay into a wildfire relief fund that would compensate property owners in the case of another catastrophic wildfire. They also didn't pass a measure that would have created a state property insurance for condos using the Hurricane Relief Fund that now acts as a part of the state's reserves. In this instance, you know, the governor said both on this show and during press conferences that if something catastrophic were to happen, like one of the three condo insurers pulling out of Hawaii, he would definitely call a special session in the interim. And he said if his climate action team identified some significant policy that needed to be implemented, he would also consider calling a special session when the Senate comes back in August to confirm judicial appointments.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's a growing worry with so many people. I just heard this weekend somebody's townhouse complex having issues. So you just don't know if they've been put on a do not lend list with
right.
the banks and just how far the ripples are going to reach through the community. But yeah, definitely something that I know House Speaker Saiki said he's very concerned about. So we'll see if we go back into special session.
Yeah.
And what else they might deal with, if it's Hawaiian Electric securitization bill. Lots of heavy topics that need to be addressed.
Right, exactly. And so we'll see what they come up with next session. And in their interim, what they decide to go with or not. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know the governor is wasting no time signing a lot of these bills, right?
Yeah. So as we heard, the short-term mm-hmm. rental bill got signed on Friday, as well as some other good governance bills. So he's working his way through. He has 10 days after their pass to sign them. So we'll be seeing him passing a lot of those along the way.
Yeah. Flurry of things. But thank you so much,
thank
Ashley.
You.
We've been talking to HBR's Ashley Mizzou. You can find her stories on our website, hawaiipublicradio.org.
Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Brenda Peterson, author of Wild Chorus. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about essential lessons we can learn from animals.
Beginning Sunday morning at 11.
Support for HPR comes from Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, offering courses for ages 50 and older, now with new community college locations. Summer term begins June 3rd. More by searching OLLIUHM.
Headline in the Star Advertiser this weekend read, Relief Session, Help for Lahaina's Recovery and an Unprecedented Tax Break for Hawaii Families. We talked to Tom Yamachika of the Tax Foundation of Hawaii about how he sees the efforts to ease the tax burden on struggling families and businesses.
I do believe them when they say that it's historically the largest tax cut they've enacted, simply in terms of scope. What we've done is, we at the foundation, we've compared the amount that a person of like a family of four would pay under current rates to what comes up under the bill, and we've done like percentage changes for different income levels. At the very lowest income level, all the tax goes away, which is, I think, good, because we should not be taxing people deeper into poverty if they're already there. And in previous years, when we looked at people making at the federal poverty line, they're already in the fourth or fifth bracket, which is insane. That basically goes away with this bill. When you get to like the median household income, I think somebody had put out statistics saying that the bill would increase by 70 or 80%, and at the upper levels, it goes down by about a quarter. So that, in terms of magnitude, the size of the cut we're talking about is really big.
So people are asking, can we afford it?
Well, that's what they always ask. And the question then becomes, can we not afford it? I mean, we have people who are jumping on planes with one-way tickets out of here every year. We've been, consistently losing like 11,000 people, according to the statistics of the census numbers. And the course that we're on, under present law, just really wasn't sustainable.
And probably just the Lahaina situation, the Maui wildfires, and taking a hard look at people who were saying, well, we may as well leave because we can't afford to stay here anymore.
Yeah, that may have been, the straw that broke the camel's back and made them buy the one-way ticket. We don't know for sure until the next census numbers came out. But we do know that in past years, it's been a decline in population net of about 11,000 per year.
Now, when we last talked, we were examining the estate tax.
Well, there were two estate tax bills. There was one, Senate Bill 3289, which the family businesses said it wasn't their bill, but they were kind of latching onto it anyway because it gave lots of benefits on the estate tax. It went through the Senate, it went through the House committees, and interestingly enough, when it came up for third reading in the House, leadership kind of did an about-face on it. They recommitted it to finance, killing that bill. The other bill was House Bill 2653, which was the one that allowed a deduction for the value of qualified family-owned business interests so that they would pass, so such interests would pass tax-free. That one was slated to go to conference committee, but the House did not appoint conferees. So no conference meetings could have happened, and the bill died that way. One thing that I suspect was in play was that one of the vocal opponents of this bill was Kimiko Iwamoto, who's in Scott Sike's district, you know, Scott Sike being the Speaker of the House, and narrowly was primaried by him the last election cycle. So that might have had something to do with it. I don't know.
Do you think lawmakers maybe didn't go far enough in some of these tax breaks?
I'm not sure. I mean, these tax breaks were plenty big, and sometimes you just have to kind of wait and see what happens in the overall, you know, state of the economy to see how effective or ineffective it was.
These will be rolled out over a period of several years. We just have to see how well our tax coffers do.
That's right. I think what they were factoring in is that people will have, you know, more money to spend, will spend it. And, by the way, we take some of that, too. That's called the general excise tax. So I think they were looking for an uptick in GET collections to offset what we lose in income tax.
Anything else?
Well, I think we really should discuss Senate Bill 1035, which is the GET exemption that they finally enacted for health care providers.
Yes, the doctors.
The bill as enacted, effective 1/1/2026, exempts medical and dental services provided by healthcare providers to patients who receive Medicaid, Medicare, or TRICARE benefits. So as long as those are the payors, the GE tax goes away. We've had a problem with, you know, docs or lack thereof, especially in the neighbor islands and rural areas for quite a few years now. The UH College of Medicine, among other people, have studied this and have noted that there is a, you know, large and growing physician gap. And a task force that was formed by the physicians, they kind of got together and they put out some statements saying that, you know, the GET was responsible for a lot of the headache that they experience. And it's not without justification because, you know, right now, hospitals don't have to pay the GET on medical services because they're, you know, they're tax-exempt organizations. But take that practice out to a private clinic or sole practitioner, which is kind of what you get in these, you know, the neighbor islands and rural areas, and the tax applies with full force, basically raising questions of, you know, why?
Yeah, so it's a matter of fairness.
Yes, and it's not like, you know, the market is elastic and allowing the, you know, the docs to pass on whatever tax they get hit with, because one thing that's kind of in common with these government payors is they basically say, look, you pass on anything then other than what we gave you, it's illegal. You can go to jail. So that's kind of, you know, something different from an insurer just saying they're not going to pay it. I mean, it's illegal. So under current law, GE tax takes a bite out of the physician. The physician cannot pass it on. They have to eat it. Again, this is not something that hospitals have to do.
And then if the shortage of those doctors in those rural areas is getting worse, that needs to be remedied.
Right, and that is why this bill was enacted. It's a little unfortunate that we got to wait a couple of years for it to kick in, but at least there's light at the end of the tunnel now. From where I stand, there are a lot of, you know, decent bills, some technical corrections, some bold steps, and I think on balance, you know, most if not all of them are very good for the state.
That was Tom Yamachika, head of the Tax Foundation of Hawaii, who we talked to this morning about the tax relief that state lawmakers are proud to agree on this legislative session.
Support for HPR comes from Haleakala Ranch with a legacy of livestock, conservation, and land stewardship since 1888, working to restore, maintain, and preserve the open vistas and natural beauty of Maui. More at HaleakalaRanch.com.
The Ukraine war, more than 2 years now. But just weeks after Russia's 2022 invasion, both sides came close to a settlement that could have ended the war.
There was a willingness to entertain some pretty far-reaching concessions on both sides to get a deal at the time. And that really, that is surprising.
The story behind those secret, thwarted negotiations. That's on the next On Point.
Beginning this afternoon at 2.
Support for HPR comes from Ulupono Initiative. By investing and partnering in local food production, Ulupono supports Hawaii's farmers and ranchers who help reduce the risk of wildfires through land management and stewardship.
This is The Conversation on statewide, member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up, your backyard quiz. So we're starting the week by taking you to a historical backyard. Now, let's start with a bit of background. When it was founded in 1955, our mystery campus was called St. Louis Junior College. The founders were members of the Society of Mary, more commonly known as Marinists, and from the beginning, they had an educational mission. The Marinists were started by a French Catholic priest who hoped to rebuild the church in the wake of the French Revolution. Its missionaries first arrived in the Hawaiian Islands in 1883, and 8 Marinists assumed the leadership of what was then the College of Ahuimanu and is now St. Louis School. Then when the similarly named sister school, St. Louis Junior College, became the 4-year coeducational institution it is today, it was given the name of the founder of the Marinist Order. Your easy Monday backyard quiz question, who was he? Call 808-941-3689 or toll free 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. The first one to get it right gets an HPR reusable tote bag.
Support for the Backyard Quiz comes from Nereid Hawaii, supporting nonprofits such as the Molokai Affordable Housing Alliance, providing kupuna with resources for building affordable homes on Molokai. NereidHawaii.com.
The American Cancer Society put out a first-of-its-kind report last week. The publication collected cancer facts and figures for Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, and other Pacific Islanders. One troubling takeaway, Native Hawaiian and other Pacific Island people die from preventable cancers up to 3 times more than Caucasians. The Conversation's Maddie Bender spoke to Rebecca Siegel, one of the authors of the report, to learn more about what people can do to lower their cancer risk.
We have cancer facts and figures that we publish annually that covers cancer occurrence in the U.S. as a whole. And then we have supplemental reports that focus on a specific population. This is the first time that we have a separate report for Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and other Pacific Islander people. And so it's our inaugural report. We did publish an article about 8 years ago on this population, but it was just an article. It wasn't its own report. And part of the reason for that is because of the limited amount of disaggregated data, because we think that's so important.
And this term of disaggregation, would you mind defining it?
When you have a small population, and this is a relatively small population, Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and other Pacific Islanders, a lot of times the data are combined in order to report it. And what we mean when we say disaggregate is to break apart those groups. And in this case, we're breaking them apart by ethnic group, because we know that Asian Americans especially are a very heterogeneous group made up of Chinese people and Asian Indian people and Japanese people and Korean people. And all of these different groups have a different cancer pattern because of their differences in immigration history, differences in the prevalence of risk factors, whether or not they were born in the U.S. or born outside the U.S. So all of these factors influence cancer risk factors and also access to care. The reason that it's so important to look at separate ethnic groups is because when we aggregate those data, we lose sight of disparities. And in order to address disparities, we have to know that they exist.
And so now is the hope that this report will be used as a benchmark going forward. I see it covers, I believe, up to 2026. So is the idea that in a few years, you'll look back on it, you'll be able to have this as historical data and then compare going forward?
Yes, and hopefully the next time we publish this report, we will have even more disaggregated data that can be more useful in terms of reducing the cancer burden within this broad group.
And so let's now get into some of the differences between these populations that are presented in the report.
There are a lot of large disparities in the Native Hawaiian and other Pacific Islander population compared to the white population. And the disturbing thing about this is that these cancers are largely preventable. For example, cervical cancer death rates in this group are 2.5 times higher than rates in the white population. And we know that cervical cancer is almost 100% preventable, both through screening, which prevents cancer and allows for the detection of early disease that can be successfully treated. And then now we have the HPV vaccine that is preventing large numbers of cancers in those young women who have already been vaccinated. So that's just an example, but we're also seeing especially high death rates in this population for liver cancer, which is also largely preventable. About 70% of deaths in the U.S. are estimated to be preventable. And also for uterine corpus cancer, a large percentage of which are due to excess body weight.
Yeah, and on that point, I know it is difficult to talk about the reasons behind these very complex disparities, but you present some of the lifestyle factors that can be associated with cancer. So things like smoking, weight, alcohol, and you're not seeing huge differences. At least that was my read. You're not seeing big differences among Asian American populations compared to white populations. But where you are seeing some of these differences is in access to care, in visits, in screening. Would you be able to talk about that?
Unfortunately, we don't have risk factor data for Native Hawaiian and other Pacific Islanders. We do have risk factor prevalence for Asian Americans, although not for a lot of the separate ethnic groups. But in terms of risk factors, Asian Americans tend to do pretty well. Smoking rates are low. I would say, in contrast, Native Hawaiian people have very high smoking rates, specifically in Hawaii, almost two times higher smoking rates than whites. And obesity is also almost two times higher in Native Hawaiian people in Hawaii compared to whites. So those are two concerning data points that contribute to a lot of cancers. In fact, both smoking and obesity are associated with 12 different cancers. And I think that those risk factors are contributing to some of these disparities that we're seeing. But in terms of Asian Americans, yes, I would say that access to care is the big factor, especially those that are more likely to be born outside the U.S.
We talk about these disparities, but there was a 40% lower overall cancer death rate among Asian Americans compared to white populations. And I don't want to make you speculate on the reasons why, but I mean, what seems to be going on there with those numbers?
It's not too surprising, because overall, Asian Americans have and historically have had low smoking rates. And really, the cancer rates in whites over the past four decades are largely driven by the smoking epidemic. And mm-hmm. so even though we've been seeing declines in smoking prevalence since the 1960s, we are still experiencing the repercussions of smoke, so much high levels of smoking in this country. So I think it's both that, and also Asian Americans tend to have lower body weight, and a lot of cancers are associated with excess body weight. So I think those are the two major risk factors, and because Asian Americans in general have low smoking and obesity, it does make sense that they have lower overall cancer mortality. Lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer death, because it's quite fatal. And so when you have low rates of lung cancer, that's going to have a large influence on that disparity.
Mm-hmm. Providers here and patients here, people who might belong to some of these communities, like the Asian American community, or who are Native Hawaiian, who are Pacific Islanders, what should they take away knowing some of the facts and figures presented in this report?
The takeaway, I would say, is that almost half of all cancer deaths are potentially preventable. A lot of people don't realize that there's a lot you can do to reduce your cancer risk. And so I would just say letting both providers and the general public know that if you do smoke, talk to your doctor about how you can quit, and then also maintaining a healthy body weight, being physically active, and getting screened both for things like HBV and HCV that contribute to liver cancer, as well as cervical and breast cancers. All of these things can reduce your risk of cancer death.
And HBV, HCV, those are hepatitis B and hepatitis C, correct?
Yes, yes. Okay.
Is there anything else you wanted to add, or anything that you think listeners should know about this report?
I think it's just important to reiterate. For example, lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer death in all of these subgroups that we analyzed. And lung cancer is 86% preventable. So just so important for people to realize that they really can make a difference in their cancer risk. It's not all about luck. And just talking to your provider about how you can reduce your cancer risk.
That was Rebecca Siegel of the American Cancer Society speaking with HPR's Maddie Bender about a new report on cancer in Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. We'll have links to the full report on the conversation page of our website after the show.
Support for HPR comes from Waikoloa Beach Resort on the island of Hawaii, offering Kama'aina hospitality with a range of options for dining, shopping, and activities. More about rediscovering the Kohala Coast at waikoloabeachresort.com.
On the next Fresh Air, new research suggesting that plants are indeed intelligent in complex ways that could challenge our very understanding of agency and consciousness. Our guest will be climate journalist Zoe Schlanger, author of The Light Eaters, How the Unseen World of Plant Intelligence Offers a New Understanding of Life on Earth. Join us.
Beginning this afternoon at 3, following On Point.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Mobi, a Hawaii wireless company since 2005, featuring a locally based customer care team committed to problem solving and personal service for each client. Learn more at mobi.com.
It's time to name the answer to today's backyard quiz. Earlier, we told you about a Kaimuki institution founded under the guidance of five members of the Society of Mary, also known as the Marinus. As the only Catholic university in Hawaii, the campus was established in 1955 as St. Louis Junior College, with 30 young men in its inaugural class. Within a two-year span, the school expanded to become a four-year co-ed facility. Along with this expansion came a rebranding. It became Chaminade College in honor of Father William Joseph Chaminade, the founder of the Society of Mary, and the answer to today's backyard quiz. In the late 60s, the school expanded again, offering evening adult classes, and by 1977, the school also added graduate programs and became the school we know today, Chaminade University of Honolulu. It holds the distinction of being one of three Marianist higher education institutions across the country. And congrats to Walter from Kaneohe. You got it right. That's today's quiz. If you have an idea for one, send it to talkback at hawaiipublicradio.org.
When you support HPR, you support locally produced programs featuring locally produced music, including Kani Kapila Sunday.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Kani Kapila Sunday. I'm Kaylee Iloma, and I'm so happy to be with you again on a Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. to offer you great Hawaiian music from all periods.
Hawaii Kula Ivi.
Aloha nui kako. You are tuned in to member-supported Hawaii Public Radio 1's Hawaii Kula Ivi. Ovo no ke yo, DJ Mermaid, Paige Okamura.
And Mauka Tumakai.
This is Mauka Tumakai. I'm your host, Roger Bong.
Your support brings the music of Hawaii to the world. Support Hawaiian and local music programs on HPR. Donate at hawaiipublicradio.org.
Russia sent a warning today that Ukraine military strikes on its territory using UK-supplied weapons could bring retaliatory strikes against British military facilities on Ukraine territory or elsewhere. As the war continues, Ukrainian college student Max Zabolotny is here in the islands on a brief stop after attending a conference in Washington, D.C. He attended Killarney High School on Oahu during the 2018-2019 school year. It was part of a U.S. State Department foreign exchange student program. He says he was allowed to leave his country temporarily because his disability, he has cerebral palsy, exempts him from serving in the Ukraine military. The conversations, Russell Subiono sat down with Zabolotny in our studio.
I studied at Kyiv Polytechnical Institute of Igor Sikorsky. It's the biggest and the most technical university of Ukraine. It's one of the best, like top three, and my major is cybersecurity. But I don't like it.
Why not?
Because it's too hard for me. Yeah, but the thing is, you have to recognize that it's too hard for you at the right time. Mm-hmm. So it happened to me when I was a sophomore. I realized I didn't like it. And I started to study human resources by myself. So now for 2 years, I've been working in the human resources field.
Okay, and you like that better?
Of course.
I've also been told that in addition to school, you're also working to be able to financially support your mom and your sister. How do you balance your school life with work and home life? It sounds like your life is really busy.
Sometimes it is. Yeah, but you get used to it. After the COVID, and unfortunately because of the full invasion happening, everybody got used to working and studying remotely. So I had this schedule at my university, and I still have it, that allows me to study whenever I want and to turn around my assignment. Basically, yeah, I have one deadline, and I just have to turn it in by the deadline. So all the lectures are recorded. We have this nice portal that has all the material available, so I can study when I want to. And also, I have a full-time job. You can work whenever you want, how much you want. The task is to get the job done.
It seems a lot more flexible than if someone was imagining like a traditional school schedule, work schedule.
Of course, it's very flexible. I love it. Yeah. I don't see myself like going to the office 5 to 9. No.
What's it like in the area of Ukraine where you live? Is the fighting close by, or are you kind of relatively out of harm's way?
So I live in Kyiv. There is no fighting, no. But the truth is that nobody is really safe in Ukraine right now. Sometimes I hear really loud explosions because of the missiles coming and drones. For example, about 2 weeks ago, I woke up at 3 or 4 a.m. because I heard the air raid alert. And we have a lot of resources on messenger called Telegram that tells us what is fine, when is fine, where the strike is going to be, etc. So I knew nothing was happening. I went to the bathroom, but apparently I wasn't like careful enough. When I went out, there was this huge explosion. It made me drop down on the floor just because that's what your body does. Yeah, so basically, there is no fighting in the capital of Kyiv, but missiles and strikes coming all the time.
How do you protect yourself when you hear the air raid, when the sirens go off? Do you just have to take shelter somewhere?
The best scenario and the most responsible one is going to the shelter. We have a lot of shelters right now. They're equipped with free water. Like, basically, it's all free, but it has electricity, it has central heating, it has water, it has supplies, etc. And you have this map on your phone that tells you where the nearest shelter is. And it has connections, Wi-Fi. So it's like you just go into some place underground. Or it can be also a subway. So we have this huge subway in Kyiv, and you can go to any metro station to hide yourself. But I'll be honest with you, when you've been living under these explosions for some time, you get kind of tired of it. For example, sometimes explosions come in every day at 3 a.m., 5 a.m. And if you go to the shelter, you get really exhausted. So we have this rule of two walls. If you cannot access the shelter, you just go to any place in your house or apartment that has at least two walls, like before the street. That's what kind of makes you safe. Okay. So that's what we do.
I've heard from some people, you know, some older people who've been through different wars, that there comes a point where it's not a shock anymore. It's become part of life.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. It's right. Unfortunately, that's not something I would think I would get used to, but it is.
I know you've only been outside the country for about a week or so. Is there anything that you think the general public might not understand about what's going on in your country?
So when studying cybersecurity, one of my tasks when I was a junior or sophomore about that was to break down one of the examples of Russian propaganda. So you would take it, some news, some article, or some TV program, and you would break it down, like, why it's not true, where did the money come from to sponsor this piece of information, and etc. In Ukraine, we are used to filtering it, so we understand what's true and what's not. But here, I can see some of the Russian propaganda media that really actively push the idea of the truth.
Wow.
Yeah, because United States is a land of freedom, mm-hmm. so you cannot really forbid this. So, and I noticed a lot of people, not a lot of some people, a small amount, follow this media, and then their opinion on this war comes out of this media. And they think that Russia is doing the right side, which is not. I had a conversation with one person, and it took me about 10 minutes to break it down and change her point of view. I would say it's scary how effective it is.
Switching gears a little bit, I know you spent a school year here on Oahu during the 2018 to 2019 school year. You attended Kalani High School. What was that experience like for you?
I came to beautiful island of Oahu, Hawaii. It's all random. You cannot choose where to go. Mm-hmm. You just get a place and you go there. So I got to a wonderful host family. They gave me a place to live. They fed me. They cared about me. I joined Kalani High School, and the education here is very different.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very different. In Ukraine, we don't choose what to study. We just study everything. Oh, so, okay. Like, in 1 year, I would have physics, geometry, chemistry, biology, and everything else that you could imagine. Okay. So it was very different for me.
Yeah. Did you feel like it was easier? Did you feel like, oh, I lucked out. I got an easier
of
school
course.
Year?
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. When I came here, I was a sophomore, and they put me in Algebra 2. I will not comment it. I will just say that from the first class, they switched me to pre-calculus. It was too easy for me. But in Ukraine, you don't have these artistic classes. We only had like art and music. That's it. But here you can choose, for example, pottery or drawings or choir or something else, a music band. Yeah, you have this variety. And so in Ukraine, you have this broad perception of everything. But here you have the opportunity and ability to focus in one direction.
What was your favorite thing about living here? Was there something that really stood out to you or something that really impacted you?
I come from Ukraine. We have winter. You don't.
Yeah, I could see how not having to go through a hard winter here is probably something pretty nice.
It was hard, but... It was also confusing. I was in wrestling team, and on one of our very first meetings, our coach told us, so when we go to some competition or some tournament, please keep in mind that we go at 4 a.m. It's going to be cold. Take your jacket. And then he would look at me like, Max, don't listen to it. you'll be fine.
Was there anything that you learned living here or that you acquired a taste for that you took home with you and that continues to be part of your life?
When I lived in Ukraine, I craved for loco moco.
Yeah, I love that.
I tried to find a recipe and I couldn't.
Max, man, I really enjoyed talking to you. Thanks so much for coming to the station.
Thanks a lot for having me.
And that was Ukraine college student Max Zobolotny talking with HPR's Russell Subiono. That does it for us today. Tomorrow, we plan to hear from Mufi Hanneman, the chairman of the Hawaii Tourism Authority. The agency was in the legislative hot seat last year, so how did HTA fare this session? Got feedback for us? Call or talk back line and record something, 808-792-8217. You can find the conversation on our website as well as on Spotify, Apple, and Google. I'm Catherine Cruz. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the conversation.